And the first reading is from Genesis chapter 1, and it's from verse 26 to verse 31. And then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God he created them, male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds in the sky and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning on that sixth day. So Lucy's going to do talk number one. We've got three small talks today.
Short talk, you say? Three. You do know, a lot of you know that I along with Ron, I teach on the Spurgeon's course that runs here, Equipped to Minister. And we do three talks, don't we, Ron, during the day. And each one's about 2 hours long. But I know there's people here with a shorter attention span and some young people. So actually, we're going to keep it quite short. How green is the gospel? Originally, I never used to think that the gospel was about the environment. And then I started thinking a bit more about it. And the more I've started thinking, the more I've found that God cares enormously for the environment and that we're part of that too. So we're going to have a little look through that. Which button do I press, please? That one there. Right. Whew. God's amazing creation. If you looked at verse 28 in that passage that we just read, there were a number of tasks that God gave people. Be fruitful and increase in number. When I was a maths teacher some years ago, I stopped to have a baby. It was Lily, actually. And one of the people said, "Be fruitful and multiply." Go forth and multiply. I thought, yeah, that's very clever. But be fruitful and increase in number. You can't stop at just a couple of people. We need lots of people in the world. Fill the earth. Subdue it. Rule over the fish, the birds, the animals. Said in such a way as to mean everything. God will provide everything that you need to eat. And I did notice that he says, eat those things which have seeds in them. Those things which are sustainable. Which, when you use them, you haven't wiped them out. And what's our task? If you look ahead in chapter 2, work the land and cultivate it. Take care of it. Make it work for you, but treat it well. In fact, that verb is used occasionally throughout the Old Testament to take care of it, in many cases where people have to be serving other people. The earth has to serve us, but we're serving it too. We're looking after it. So God looks at all of this, and right at the beginning he says, yes, this is good. Not only good, it's very good. By day 6, he's really impressed with creation. And I think you've probably had this experience, I've had this experience, when you're out and about somewhere, away from the traffic, away from the stresses of home, whatever it is, and you just get that wow moment. Maybe it's a view, maybe it's a beach, maybe it's out and about somewhere, and you just think, wow, that sunset. How come it's that beautiful? How come those trees make me feel really, whoa, inside? And there's that spark, eternity in your heart, something that God has placed in there that you recognize there is something very good about creation. Order out of chaos, which doesn't make any sense scientifically. But it's broken. You don't need me to tell you that. It's broken. People thought they knew best. People decided that, even though God said be fruitful and increase in number, that maybe it'd be okay to overpopulate certain areas. That even though God said fill the earth and subdue it, that we could abuse the earth's resources. not just subduing, but taking advantage of. When God says rule over the fish, the birds, and the animals, we've been selfish in our destruction of many habitats in the sea, in the air, in the land. And instead of God providing our food, we've been greedy and wanted more and more and more at any cost to the environment. Where God says, work the land, take care of it, we've been refusing to take care of our planet. And this is something that we do individually, as families, as nations, as organizations. And none of us are completely off the hook on this. It's a bit like a parallel with morality. You might make choices about what you think is an okay way to live. You might say, well, I don't swear. I don't murder people. I don't drive too fast. Now, these are decisions that are to do with morality. But there's parallels with how we make our decisions, our life choices, about how we care for creation. So what happens? Well, just before Noah's story, we note that God was grieved that he had made man, and his heart was filled with pain. And don't you also feel that sometimes? You get the wow moments when you walk through the forest glades or the beaches, but you also get those moments of, how come somebody put graffiti all over the guided busway? How come somebody left a mess at the front of church? And you feel grieved inside you, and you feel that pain. Because we're made in God's image and we feel that pain like he does. What kind of examples have we got? How am I saying that this is individual responsibility and corporate responsibility? Well, there's many examples. Soil loss, deforestation and desertification is happening, UNESCO reckons, in about a third of the land on the earth that it's threatened. We're over-farming, we're over-grazing. Urbanisation has meant that places have been destroyed. Climate change, which we are partly responsible for, and stripping the earth of resources has led to soil loss. Species loss and the reduction of biodiversity. So who remembers doing food chains or food webs when you were at school and you know what eats what? Remember that? And you start right at the bottom. Maybe you've got in the Antarctic, you've got some krill or plankton, and then you've got the fish and the seals. What eats the seals? Killer whales. Scary. And you've got these biodiversity, and things rely on their food chains. And sometimes you take something out of that and everything wobbles. We're changing these things by getting rid of native pollinators, like bees, by the use of our pesticides because of the food that we want, by demanding a lot and consuming a lot. What about overfishing? What about wanting to have cod and chips on a Friday? Or needing to have food that you know, well, you know, there's an awful lot of meat, but, you know, I think we'll manage. Are we looking at the labelling on the products that we buy and thinking about whether they're responsible sources? Greenhouse gases, global warming, and the ozone layer being depleted. Way back when, we had CFCs and they got banned, didn't they? But there are still lots of chemicals that are releasing carbon into the atmosphere and also methane. And that's having a massive impact on our climate and on the temperature of our planet. Industry, agriculture, transport, even the fact that we want things brought to our home when we order things has an impact on this. Increased water demands. I don't know about you, but I've been on holiday sometimes to places where they've said, please don't use much water. We haven't got very much. If you could try not to have very many showers, and if you could try not to use too much water, we'd really appreciate it. And it's been quite humbling, because then I think, whoa, I use a lot of water at home. I don't think twice about that. Maybe you go on holiday somewhere when you expect them to have swimming pools and water parks and use all their water with golf courses and growing vegetables in Spain, perhaps, and that's reducing the aquifers underneath and having an impact on the water level there. Excessive energy use. How many people per car? Are we expecting things to be delivered? Things about transport, things about industry, whether we switch the lights off. And unsustainable waste production. Single-use items have been in the news a lot lately. Plastics, whether we should replace them with other things. The throwaway culture that we're all part of. None of us are completely faultless in this. Some of us have made some great strides in actually tackling these things. But at the moment, we're living in a very broken world.
And the second reading is taken from the book of Psalms 104, starting at verse 10 through to 25. He makes springs pour water into the ravines. It flows between the mountains. He gives water to all the beasts of the field. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. The birds of the sky nest by the waters. They sing among the branches. He waters the mountains from his upper chambers. The land is satisfied by the fruit of his work. He makes grass grow for the cattle and plants for the people to cultivate, bringing forth food from the earth. Wine that gladdens human hearts, oil to make their faces shine, and bread that sustains their hearts. The trees of the Lord are well watered, the cedars of Lebanon that he planted. There the birds make their nests, the stork has its home in the junipers. The high mountains belong to the wild goats, the crags are the refuge for the hyrax. He made the moon to mark the seasons, and the sun knows when to go down. You bring darkness, it becomes night, and all the beasts of the forest prowl. The lions roar for their prey and seek their food from God. The sun rises and they steal away. They return and lie down in their dens. Then people go out to their work, to their labor, until evening. How many are your works, Lord? In wisdom you made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. There is the sea, vast and spacious, teeming with creatures beyond number. Living things, both large and small.
So, how green is the gospel? I left you probably feeling a little bit saddened by that first section. And it's meant to be. There is a parallel with redemption and with how sin impacts the world around us, and it should make us sad. And the sin of how we have been abusing creation should also make us sad. But I've been teaching on evangelism and mission recently, and I found a very good book by Chris Wright, who's written much thicker books about mission, which are very, very good, The Five Marks of Mission. And the five marks of mission are very interesting because the Anglican Church decided back in the 80s it was probably a good idea to look at mission and work out, well, what is it? And when we think of mission, we think of evangelism. We think of people who try and explain the gospel to other people. And that is one part of it. But in fact, as I say, there's five marks of mission. Can I have my blipper? Thank you very much. And God's mission includes creation care. Let's have a look at what these five marks of mission are. Oh, I didn't do that page. That was silly of me. We're going to look at the mission of God before we do the five marks of mission. The mission of God. God has decided that he is going to redeem creation. It's his work. God is the missionary. He sends Jesus, his son, and they send the Holy Spirit into the world. And it's God's work. That means that it's not something that you are forced to do. You are invited to join in. Because it's God's work, the work of mission. That might change how you think about mission. It's not your job, it's God's job, but he invites you to be part of it. The difference between somebody saying, you must come round, and somebody saying, oh, come round and come to my party, I'm inviting you. The invitation is far more exciting. Right, so these five marks of mission, and I'll tell you what they are. Evangelism, the one at the top, proclaiming the good news of Jesus. Teaching, which is a bit like when you come to church or you have a home group or you're in a youth group session and you're learning about and being discipled about faith and you grow in your maturity. Compassion, following Jesus' example by going out into the world and helping people who are in some way limited. Maybe they're poor, maybe they're disabled, maybe because of who they are, they don't have the rights everybody else has. Justice, which is about finding justice for people who need it when they can't have the voice for that. Jesus is the judge of all the earth. That's part of his mission. And then creation care, handling what belongs to Jesus by right of creation and redemption. And creation care, the Anglican Church decided, was part of these five elements of mission that really matter. And all of them are tied together by the idea that God is redeeming, that he makes an amazing creation, he recognises it's broken through human we know best, but God knows best, and he will put it right. And he invites us to be part of that, and I find that quite exciting. I'm going to whiz through this one, because that's just saying what I already just told you. So what is creation care? What does that look like? What is the mission of creation care? It means using the resources of the earth in a godly way. It doesn't mean you may never have a car, but it does say, is it really appropriate to be driving to church this morning? I have to hold my hands up and say, I drove to church this morning. Matthew cycled, but I had to drive because I had to get Joseph here and he won't cycle. And because we had to bring some stuff. But actually, if I'd thought ahead, I could have maybe found a different way around that. It's not evil to have a car, but am I using the resources in a godly way? It means ecological concern and action. Not just recycling, but also asking ourselves mindfully, am I doing what's appropriate with the resources I've got here? And it means looking back at Genesis 1 and 2 and saying, actually, there's that commission that God gave humanity. Take care of this world. Look after it. Use it. Don't abuse it. Well, how do we know God even cares about it? Well, that's why I wanted to include the Psalm 104 passage. I could have picked a number of different places, but Psalm 104 includes the lines, he makes springs pour water into the ravines, it flows between the mountains. They give water to all the beasts of the field. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. The birds of the sky nest by the waters. They sing among the branches. God is looking after his creation despite it being broken. He doesn't walk away. So often in our society, when something's broken, we think, ah, that's a shame. Oh, well, I'll get a new one. God doesn't do that. God remains passionate about his creation. He remains the sustainer of his creation. And if God doesn't abandon his creation, then how can we? As I say, it's not a mandate, it's an invite. And there's a passage in 1 Corinthians 13 that's often read at weddings, but there's a lovely bit in it where it says, love is not self-seeking. And here's the test. Your actions, are they self-seeking or not? So we have to look at some of these questions. Which car do we buy and how much do we use it? The Morans are in Canada at the moment, but I think they're amazing because Stephanie and Brendan don't have a car. And when they need one, they hire one. But they get around, and Brendan cycles Aria into school miles every morning. And they just decide, you know, we'd rather not have a car, it's better for the environment. How do we use electricity at home, or energy generally? Heating. Do we close the windows? Do we keep the heating low? Do we switch the lights off? Do we have power from solar panels if that's reasonable to have them? Do we consider where we're going on holiday, how we get there? Are we flying or driving? The water that's needed to supply the courses, golf courses, the ensuite rooms, and so on. The food that we eat and the energy and water needed to supply it. Food is now a big deal in the secular world. People are talking about flexitarian diets, which is to cut down your red meat intake. Are we looking at local producers to cut down food miles? And are we mindfully, how often we need to update our belongings? To say, many of us will say, oh, well, that's broken, doesn't matter, I won't bother fixing it, I'll buy a new one. Oh, I want some new clothes. Oh, well, I won't go to the charity shop, I'll just go and get some brand new ones. And are we thinking about reducing our electricity use, reducing our red meat consumption, thinking about whether our flights are necessary, how we commute, whether we use low-efficiency white goods, and how we reduce, reuse, and recycle. There's a group within the Histon Impington community that's to do with sustainability, HI sustainability, and they put out a little picture just the other day on Facebook reminding people that there are many ways you can look after creation. Reduce, reuse, refill, repair and repurpose. There's the repair cafe occasionally. Replace, recycle, and then use the bin when you just have to, when there's nothing else you can do with those things. This is God's mission, and he invites us to be part of it.
So, I'm going to be reading from Revelation chapter 21, verses 1 to 4. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first earth was no longer had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, no more mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things passed away."
So we've had a couple of thoughts already. We've had God made creation amazing, and it's broken, but he still is passionate about it and still sustaining it, and his mission is to restore what he made that was perfect and good. And he invites us to be part of that. He didn't need to, but he invites us to be part of that. Now, I love this passage in Revelation 21 because it's helped us to see the future. It prophesies what's going to be happening. There's going to be a restored, perfect version of what is at the moment. What is broken and suffering now will no longer be broken, will no longer suffer. There is a good day coming. God's mission will be complete, the shalom, the wholeness. It will happen. And this new heaven and new earth will be perfect. Now, you could take the line, and I know some people do, some Christians do, that we could say, well, if there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth, what's the point? If God's going to replace it all, why even bother? Maybe we should use plastic straws. Maybe we should just burn up as much carbon as we want to. God's going to replace it all, isn't he? The old order of things is going to pass away. Well, there's reasons we can't be complacent. And I had to think about this, and I thought, if there was a building that was on fire, and you could think about it and think, oh, that's really sad that that building's on fire, but it's insured. The insurance will pay for a new garden and a new house. That's fine. The insurance will pay for it. It'll be replaced. It'll be, you know, new for old. It'll be fine. You could take that line on this logic. But the building would be destroyed. And those who were inside it would be suffering in the process. And that's why I think this logic doesn't work. Reasons we cannot be complacent. We were commissioned. God commissioned humanity to take care of creation in Genesis. It's part of God's mission, and he's invited us into it. The church needs to be seen to be active in creation care. You know, others around us are doing this. If we have a better motive because we're not fearful, we're actually doing it out of a motive of love, then that's exciting, and we need to be seen to be active just as others are. The actions that we take are parallel to many moral decisions. People might judge us and say, well, you know, you're all well and good on these areas, but how come you're not doing these things as a church? You know, I can't take you seriously if you haven't got green credentials. And that's interesting. People could challenge us on that. The other week, Station Road was closed for 15 minutes, ostensibly for reducing traffic to draw attention to that, but also for safety for children during the school run. And it raised all sorts of queries locally. Is this appropriate to do this? Extinction Rebellion's got a name for itself for being very proactive in trying to do things to draw people's attention to climate change. But there were a lot of people that thought, well, maybe this is a good thing that we challenge whether people should be driving to school. If others in society are already active in tackling climate change, then we can use that because our motives can be a witness, as they said on the clip. People say, well, why are you passionate about this? Well, we've got a reason, and then we can explain our reasoning. We're passionate about it for lots of reasons, and one of them is that God commissioned us to do this and invited us to be part of this. So, there's a burning building. We wouldn't abandon a burning building with others inside it just because of the insurance. And with climate change, many of us are probably aware that the poor are disproportionately affected. They're disproportionately affected in the way that the places that they live are becoming unlivable. And the situations they find themselves in, the lack of food, the lack of clean water, the air that they breathe. Look at what Tear Fund are coming out with. Look at what BMS and others are doing, and Mica Global, and you'll see that the poor are disproportionately affected, and it's frightening. When creation care involves personal sacrifice, and it will, God wants us to learn to trust him. And there will be personal sacrifices, as there are in morality, things that you have to choose, I'm not going there. But that you trust God despite that. He said, well, actually, you said you'd provide me with food. I will trust you for that. If it means I can't fly somewhere because it's not really necessary for me to fly, then okay, God, you'll provide. If it means that I've got to change my eating habits and I don't want to because I like that sort of food, I've got to trust God that he will provide for me. If we're self-seeking, we know God looks at our hearts. Other people are looking at the outside, but God's looking at our hearts, and he can change our minds. Be transformed by the renewing of your minds. He can change our minds, our hearts, if we're willing to let him. For some of us, changing habits of many decades is very hard to do. Or even because we've never thought about whether certain things go in the blue bin or not. Or whether it's really appropriate to drive without car sharing. Or whether we're using paper wisely. But God knows what our heart motive is. So, we know God is great. He wants us to appreciate the amazing creation and use it, but also repent of our mindlessness in hurting it, to act, to care for it, to play our part in putting it right. And there are so many good ways you can do this. I was wondering whether to do a roving mic, but we're over time at the moment, so I won't do that now. But there are many good charities, some of them Christian, that already do things with the environment, and you may be part of them. Arusha do a lot of good things. They do Eco Church, and it's worth knowing about what Ruth Wilson's doing and maybe joining in with the Green Group there. Mica Global, Tear Fund, and many others. And I want to challenge you to think, when you walk through the forest glades, do you wonder, actually, this is amazing, and I want to be part of putting this right?